Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
These vicious claims about me of inappropriate conduct with women are totally and absolutely false. And the Clintons know it, and they know it very well. These claims are all fabricated. They're pure fiction, and they're outright lies. These events never, ever happened, and the people that said them meekly fully understand. You take a look at these people, you study these people, and you'll understand also. The claims are preposterous, ludicrous, and defy truth, common sense, and logic. We already have substantial evidence to dispute these lies, and it will be made public in an appropriate way and at an appropriate time, very soon. These lies come from outlets whose past stories and past claims have already been discredited. The media outlets did not even attempt to confirm the most basic facts, because even a simple investigation would have shown that these were nothing more than false smears.
All right, glad you're with us. 26 days. Is this confusing enough for you? The water's muddied enough for you? And here you have, in the middle of what is the biggest document dump of collusion and corruption. Do you think it's by accident that all of a sudden a deluge of sexual misconduct allegations are hitting Donald Trump today? And yesterday is, you know, what now, five women coming forward saying that he might have touched them or groped them or kissed them or leered at them. You know, somebody actually sent me an email today. I thought it was pretty interesting here. Somebody said that Donald Trump, they were in first class, as one of the women claimed, and they had finished dinner and he lifted up the arm of the seat and started to make a move on her. Well, I don't think I have ever been in a first-class seat that had an arm that went up. That was 30 years ago, but half the planes we fly in are 30 years old. That was an interesting observation. I don't know what to make of them because I just don't know, and I haven't had the chance to vet it. And there's certainly a lot of mud in the waters, and I think the timing of it is predictable because of everything that we're learning from WikiLeaks. And if you look at the allegations, here's what's fascinating. I'm doing something tonight that nobody in the media was willing to do. And you have to wonder, they know what this is coming. These interviews are coming tonight on Hannity on the Fox News channel. I don't think the timing is an accident by the Clintons. We did learn through the WikiLeaks dump that they were willing to use four dead Americans to distract from the email server scandal. That was part of their strategy. How do we distract the media? We'll use Benghazi.
What difference at this point?
We'll use that to distract from the email server scandal. So it's certainly one of their tactics that has been exposed in this WikiLeaks dump that we now have had out there now for a number of days, more coming out even today, and the Clinton campaign mocking Catholics and Southerners and needy Latinos. Has the Latino community heard this? We'll give you more specifics about this. But tonight on Hannity, well, we're doing what, and this is the most fascinating thing, because I asked Kathleen, I asked Juanita, I asked Paula Jones to come on the show. There's a whole generation of people that do not know their stories. This isn't about groping. This is about sexual assault by Bill Clinton and a systematic smear by Hillary and their supporters. And this is not the consensual relationship of Jennifer Flowers. The consensual relationship of Monica Lewinsky. You know, in the case of Juanita, she claimed she was raped by Bill Clinton. In the case of Paula Jones, remember, she got an $850,000 settlement. He got impeached. And that was a case of him pulling down his pants and exposing his private parts to her, which apparently had a very distinguishing characteristic, which helped her prove her case. Because if she didn't see it, how would she have possibly have known? And then Kathleen Willey went to get a job and was groped and grabbed and fondled and touched and all of this. Here's the interesting part. None of those women were, there was no request from any of the major networks to interview them this year. Now, with all the talk about Remember the New York Times back in May, and Carrie Prejean was out there, and she said, no, they put words in my mouth. They're absolutely lying what they're saying. And there were other women out there as well. We'll get into this later in the program. Roanne Brewer Lane, she was quoted in that front page New York Times piece. So this is not the first time that the New York Times has made a decision to go at Donald Trump. Now, I'm not saying that these women, I don't know. But the timing is certainly suspect because it's right in the middle of the single biggest expose on government collusion and corruption, and Clinton collusion and corruption, the collusion with the media, the collusion with the White House, the collusion with the Justice Department, their real thoughts about the American people. You know, the pay-to-play scandal exposed at a very significant high level. These are crimes. So I'm not surprised that they're dumping all of this on Trump and the media, which we now know is working as an extension of the Clinton campaign. What do we learn? NBC is part of it. CNBC is part of it. Univision is part of it. CNN is part of it. MSNBC is part of it. The New York Times is part of it. The Boston Globe is part of it. The Washington Post is part of it. And they just don't want to tell you all these things. I mean, what did we learn? What are some of the things that we talked about? That, you know, just some of the new things that we learned today from WikiLeaks. Bill Clinton accepted a $1 million check from Qatar. Guess what's legal in Qatar? Raping women. Legal. Qatar. Taking money. That's worse than taking it from the Saudis, for crying out loud. We learned that Hillary Clinton is not so fond of the gay community. We also learned that she seemed confident she has gay voters in their back pocket. Nice of her to talk this way and think this way and explain herself this way. You know, we learned so much in these emails, it blows your mind. By the way, we apparently are in some of these emails, but I don't have time. It's not about me right now. You know, go back to where we were yesterday. You know, and by the way, Kathy Shelton is going to join Juanita, Paula, and Kathleen on Hannity tonight for the generation of people that don't know about them. Chelsea Clinton was so smart, she saw the conflict of interest as it relates to the Clinton Foundation and the connections to the State Department. She warned about it, and she was called a spoiled brat for daring to say that. We know that the Department of Justice, yeah, that same Department of Justice where Bill Clinton went on the tarmac and met with the Attorney General Loretta Lynch just days before Loretta Lynch had to make a decision about whether or not to move forward with a criminal investigation as it relates to the email server scandal. Yeah, that one. Anyway, the Department of Justice was tipping off the Clinton campaign about the email investigation so that the campaign would be prepared and how to defend themselves. We also have emails that show that during the earthquake in Haiti, which killed 150,000 people, even then the Clintons couldn't stop cashing in. And as people were dying in Haiti and they're raising these millions of dollars, well, Clinton insiders were separating out the requests from friends of Bill and William Jefferson Clinton VIPs so that their big donor buddies could get the contracts to rebuild Haiti. It's unbelievable. Just like more than half of the people Hillary saw when she was Secretary of State were donors. They sold out access to their office. That is pay to play. Bribery, quid pro quo, whatever phrase you want to use, it all fits. You know, we learned how they feel about Catholics. We'll get into that in a second. You know, we know that they even had to tell Hillary how to smile. They'd put in her speech, a smile now. Smile now. She's such a phony politician. We know that they showed that Hillary's staff, you know, literally that the DNC chair was feeding information. They totally screwed Bernie Sanders over, like, so bad. And Donald Trump was right about that from the beginning. You know, we learned that, you know, on top of calling them basement dwellers, we know that WikiLeaks shows that she wants to cut Medicare and Social Security benefits. Doesn't say that publicly. We know that reporters for all these outlets were just basically extensions of the Clinton campaign. We know that the emails reveal Hillary Clinton believes in global governance. She wanted open hemispheres. You know, it's so hard to even get to the beginning. the biggest thing you need to realize, she says you need both a public and a private position. Well, that's what she did with Benghazi, isn't it? She told us it was a YouTube video related to a spontaneous demonstration.
Libya was a different kind of calculation, yeah. And we didn't lose a single person.
Yeah, we had four dead Americans, remember? So she says you need a public and private position. These emails show exactly what that means. For example, she said, my dream is for a hemispheric common market with open trade and open borders sometime in the future with energy that is as green and sustainable. So she wants open borders in the entire Western Hemisphere. So, again, that goes back to the simple phrase that you take one position privately and one position publicly. You don't tell the public what you really think. And, of course, we learned in all of this that they plan to use Benghazi to distract. Then one has to wonder, you think maybe these women were all laid out in advance as a means of distracting at the time they needed it most in the middle of the WikiLeaks thing? Or the fact that the WikiLeaks shows that the Clinton Foundation donors are not American? Or that she supported the Keystone Pipeline and they struggled on how to handle her past support for the Keystone Pipeline? Just like they had to handle her past support for fracking? Or just like they had to handle the fact that she didn't believe a Syrian no-fly zone would work, now she supports one? Or that she said you can't possibly vet all those refugees? She took Donald Trump's position, but she takes a very different position publicly, which means that she's willing to gamble with your life in the meantime? Or that the DNC chair was giving the Clinton campaign information on Bernie Sanders' specific plans to go after her? Or that, you know, the WikiLeaks John Podesta's talking about infiltrating a church, the Catholic Church, with progressive ideology to foment revolution? Yeah, I have the timing of this attack on Trump is somewhat dubious to me. Or hacked emails show Hillary praising Vladimir Putin. What was the whole last debate in the vice presidential debate about? Or that what the emails revealing what Hillary thinks of everyday Americans. I know she's begun to hate everyday Americans, but I think we got to use it at least once. And, you know, once she says I'm running for president because you and everyday Americans need a champion. Yeah, we know she hates saying everyday Americans. There's been so much talk about Donald Trump saying some illegal immigrants commit crimes and some of those crimes are murder and rape. That's just a factually accurate statement. It's not all immigrants. Nobody believed that he was saying that because he didn't say that. But what about, you know, John Podesta, Hillary's campaign chairman, lamenting the campaign needed endorsements from, those needy Latinos. And called the former Hispanic governor a word for the anatomy which on a male begins with P. But the vernacular begins with a D. Okay? According to the hacked emails, needy Latinos. They need a call. They're so needy. You know, it's I've never seen anything like this. And then on top of that, you're deplorable, you're irredeemable, you're a bunch of rednecks. And well, what else can we say about people? Or that vetting Syrian refugees is impossible. It's insane. You know, now we got Trump allegations in the New York Times, all right, that he, more than three decades ago on an airplane, Trump gave somebody an unwanted kiss on the lips. Trump denied everything. Let's see. Paula Jones was able to describe his penis and apparently a specific problem it has in terms of its shape. She knew something was wrong with it. She got an $850,000 settlement. She got no media requests from the big media companies that we now know are in bed with Hillary this year. She'll be on my show tonight. Or Juanita Broderick. Never personally, Bill Clinton never denied personally the rape accusation. And he's been asking whether Broderick's story is true exactly one time by Sam Donaldson. And he answered that his lawyer had already issued a statement and he offered no further comment. Okay. You know, so you got a hot mic. According to the Reuters poll, has not had an impact, but this is now doubling down. Why do you think this happened on the day where we've had day after day after day of WikiLeaks exposing the most corrupt government? When you have this incestuous relationship and collusion with the Clinton camp, They own the media. They're one and the same. The Clinton camp and the Obama White House, they're one and the same. The Clinton camp and the Department of Justice are one and the same. I mean, what is somebody to believe here? How do voters go intelligently to the polls and make a decision when the waters are so muddied? Because that's exactly what they want. They don't want to talk about the things I talk about every day and who has a better vision for the economy and for health care and for energy and for refugees and for fighting ISIS and radical Islamists and immigration and energy and education. I'm not going to talk about that. I understand if you're confused. It's confusing by design. So many people are asking me, Hannity, I have no, how's this election going to turn? Is Trump going to win? You know, with all this collusion that I just went over with WikiLeaks, and now that the media, if you have ever had any doubt that the media is abusively biased and corrupt and influential and dangerous, well, now we have the proof is all in. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. It's not a question of corruption. It's a matter of how deep this corruption goes. And we know that it's basically every major media outlet. And tonight on Hannity on the Fox News Channel, I'm going to have on Paula Jones and Kathleen Willey and Juanita Broderick. And I talked to them earlier today. And I asked them, I said, have any of the major networks this election cycle, have they reached out to do interviews with you? The answer is no. The same people that are out there, you know, doing very little vetting as it relates to these new allegations against Donald Trump, which just happened to be perfectly timed with the damning release from WikiLeaks about everything where the Clintons stand, which we just went over in the last half hour. You got NBC, CNBC, Univision, CNN, MSNBC. Let's see, the New York Times, the Boston Globe, the Washington Post. They're all out there. Now, I know a lot of you would like to know what's going to happen in 26 days. I do not have a crystal ball. And worse than that, I don't even have a feel for it. If you believe the poll numbers at this point out, then Hillary Clinton is probably going to be your next president. But I don't trust the polls at this point. I think the polls are abusively biased. And historically, something always happens just before an election. Just before an election, what usually happens is you get this adjustment like a week outside of the actual election where the polling companies begin to dig down a little bit deeper and the polls get a little bit more accurate because at the end of the day, they want to be able to say, we nailed it. You can trust us. So if the polls are off now, I don't think you can take them into account in any way. Now, my best take on things is now that Trump has to run against the Republican establishment, which clearly hates him. This is the most puzzling thing in all of this. On the Supreme Court issue alone and Donald Trump revealing the names of the originalists he put on the court, you'd think that would be enough for Republicans to vote for Donald Trump and work for Donald Trump, but that's not enough. You would think that Donald Trump's position on saying radical Islam would be enough. You think that Donald Trump vetting refugees would be enough. You think Donald Trump eliminating Obamacare would be enough. You think Donald Trump allowing repatriated money from multinational corporations would be enough. You think energy independence would be enough. Choice in education would be enough. Building a wall would be enough. No, it's not. So what I suspect now is happening is Trump is probably going to try, like his whole campaign has been, to do something rather unconventional in terms of politics. And I guess it's probably a risky move in a lot of ways. I'm not sure if he has any other choice. Because when you have the Republican establishment, the entire Democratic establishment, the entire media establishment, all the lobbyist establishment, and even the UN establishment, globalist establishment against you, and you're hanging out there on a thread by your own and on your own, and the only thing you've got left is to go directly to the American people. So I think Donald Trump is now strategizing and engaged in a plan that is not designed probably to bring over a whole bunch of swing voters anymore, but to impact turnout in battleground states. And, you know, if you look at the polls that we keep reading, they're all weighted anyway based on past turnout and performance models. Whereas in the case of the Wall Street Journal NBC poll, not weighted at all, or in the post-debate poll by CNN, it came out 57% thought Hillary Clinton won the election. But the model they used was 58% of Hillary supporters. So you got to look at all of these methods are flawed this year. It's sort of like the Brexit vote. Prime Minister Cameron thought that, no way, he thought he was going to win. They were going to vote to stay. And he thought he was going to have about a 5-point victory. It ended up being a 5-point defeat. So I'm just imagining that what Trump and his team are doing now is they're going to swamp, hoping that their supporters, the people, are going to push away all of the clutter and all of the noise and turn off the media and stop listening to the mainstream media. I don't think they'll ever trust them again. And stop listening to the Republican establishment. If anything, they're going to motivate more people to go out for Trump. And they're certainly not going to be swayed by the Democrats, nor are they going to be persuaded by lobbyists. And I think what they're trying to do now is hope and pray that a brand new turnout model occurs on Election Day that would render opinion polls that could be off even beyond what happened in Brexit. Well, the reverse of that could take place. I mean, it just doesn't work. That's a possibility. In other words, with Donald Trump basically now facing Republican opposition, Democratic opposition, media opposition, to the extent that he is, I'm not sure he has any other choice here. Now, I could tell you that the Reuters poll points out, the latest Reuters poll shows that Donald Trump's hot mic comments had no impact whatsoever with women. I could tell you that, but I don't really think it means a whole hell of a lot. You know, I could go back and tell you that the New York Times, which screwed up so badly in terms of its first hit piece, Roanne Brewer Lane and, you know, people like Carrie Prejean and others. I mean, that backfired so badly, so they've been waiting for the next opportunity. You know, as we can see from the New York Times video interview with the first Trump grope accuser, Jessica Leeds, there are a little bit of problems with her story right off the top. The biggest problem would be that Miss Leeds told the Times that she really didn't get all that upset while Trump was groping her above the waist, but when he started headed south, that made her mad. I don't know how to interpret that. And the second grope accuser, Mindy, whatever her name is, who came forward in this morning's Palm Beach Post, it turns out that, you know, she was photographing an event at Mar-a-Lago and didn't actually see Donald Trump grope her. She was looking in the opposite direction when she felt something nudge her backside. That's the word she used, nudge. She initially assumed the nudge came from her assistant, who was carrying a camera bag, and she thought that the camera bag had bumped into her from behind. When she turned around and Donald Trump was among the people standing around, she now assumes the nudge was Donald Trump trying to grope her. I'm just giving you the facts here. After the show, her assistant was standing in a pavilion behind the main house in the middle of a group of people to the left of the Regis Philbin, and to the left of it was Regis Philbin and his wife Joy, according to this particular guy. To her immediate right was Trump and his fiance Melania at the time. All of a sudden, I felt a grab, a little nudge. I think it's Ken's camera bag. That was my first instinct. I turn around and there's Donald. He sort of looked away quickly. I quickly turned back, facing Ray Charles, and I'm stunned. She said she didn't witness the alleged groping. But he said he has never had any reason to doubt that it was her, it was Donald Trump. Hey, she doesn't even know. I mean, did anyone pay any attention to that? How is it that the people I'm going to have on TV tonight, and by the way, get ready, I am going to be smashed. Bam! Boom! I'm going to be criticized, which is not unusual, right? Anyway, when I get criticized, that's fine. I could live with that. But the New York Times, it appears we now have four women coming out of the woodwork within hours of each other, all claiming Donald Trump groped or kissed them against their will. And this is obviously an attempt to neutralize the WikiLeaks revelations. And the highly successful Trump campaign strategy of confronting Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and their horrible treatment of women. And we're going to air them on TV tonight. But if you want to look at the differences between these 11th hour, out of the blue, largely unvetted allegations against Trump, and the facts have been long established in the cases of Bill Clinton's accusers, although I think it's important for millennials and people that didn't know the Clintons when they were in the White House to hear them. I think it's worth pointing out that nothing alleged by Trump's accusers come even remotely in terms of the level of seriousness of what Juanita, Paula, and Kathleen allege. In fact, the claims by Trump accusers don't even rise to the level of the accusation of Paula Jones. And Paula Jones got an $850,000 settlement in part because apparently there is a very distinguishing characteristic to Bill Clinton's private part. Apparently he has a particular disease that results in its curvature. And apparently Paula was able to identify that. Now, how would Paula know that if she didn't see it, if he didn't pull down his pants and expose it? So, not trying to be too crude here. There's nothing remotely similar in any of the Trump accusers' claims to what Jones has experienced. And even in the case of Kathleen Willey, I mean, she's talking about a full-on groping, grabbing, touching, fondling, kissing against her will. Nothing is similar to any of the allegations made here today. She gave Jessica Leeds, gave her story to the New York Times sometime this week. Trump did nothing like that. In fact, there's a very curious aspect to Ms. Leeds' story, which the Times didn't bother to resolve. The Times did not include the detail in their print report, but in the video with Leeds that they released, she says that when Trump started groping her breast, it didn't make her all that upset. What does that mean? And if he had stuck with the upper part of the body, I might not have gotten that upset. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that she was... I don't know how to interpret that. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth here. I'm just giving you what she said. You know, I mean, does that mean it was welcome or unwelcome? I mean, we've got to be honest here, have an honest discussion, because they're trying to destroy Donald Trump's chance at the presidency here. Another point is the allegations by Paula, Kathleen, and Juanita. They've been out there a long time, vetted in every way possible. And again, you'll hear their story tonight. When Lisa Myers grilled her for more than 8 hours, you had NBC fact checkers going through the story with a fine-tooth comb, and they decided not to air it until Bill Clinton's impeachment trial was over. In the case of Trump's accusers, several of them say that their motivating factor was his claim to Anderson Cooper during Sunday night's debate that he never acted on any of the things that were discussed on the hot mic tape, which means that the news organization now carrying the allegations of these women had spent no time, no more than 3 days, vetting these stories. Seems odd to me. And it seems odd that none of these outlets spent any time talking to the women that I'll be talking to tonight. So it gets very, very confusing. And I think this is what the Clintons want. They want mud. They want dirt. They're going to fight dirty, which is what they do. And Hillary is the least likable candidate in the history of mankind. She can't win on Obama's economy with 95 million Americans out of the workforce and the lowest labor participation rate since the 70s and the lowest home ownership rate in 51 years and the worst recovery since the 40s and 13 million more Americans on food stamps and 8 million more in poverty and a doubling of our national debt and 1 in 5 American families without one person working. Now, my advice to Donald Trump, he doesn't need anybody in the media between Facebook and Twitter and all his social media. He can go out that way. And I think the polls are definitely designed to deflate any Trump supporter. You're basically supposed to conclude today that the race is over. They have decided. And you're supposed to feel deflated and go home and say, screw it, it's over. No point. Well, and that's what polling data is going to show now until about a week before the election, that Donald Trump's getting crucified, he's getting killed. It's over, it's over. Okay. And WikiLeaks isn't real. We can't pay attention. We won't confirm or deny if it's real, but it's definitely not real. Why do you think they're doing this now? You are living through a period where there's more corruption, where there is more, frankly, this is as much as or as close to the former Soviet Union and propaganda and misinformation and distortion and smears and lies and character assassination designed to make you come to certain conclusions and distract you from certain truths. I suspect that there's going to be a lot of Americans susceptible to this. And when all this is said and done, believe me, oh, we're going to have a long chat about what the Republican Party's future is going to be. I just don't have time now. But what they don't want you to focus on is this. A president that will say radical Islam and one that won't. President that will vet refugees and one that won't. President that will increase refugees 550% and one that won't. President that will cut taxes and one that will raise taxes. One that will keep Obamacare or a single payer and one that'll get rid of it for free market solutions. One that'll put coal miners and coal companies out of business and one that wants you energy independent. One that wants to build a wall and one that wants an open freaking hemisphere. You know, one that says, one that is honest and truthful in public and one that just lies to you all the time.
Don't you someday want to see a woman president of the United States of America?
That's what's at stake here. I wish I had more insight for you.
Did you call her a narcissistic Looney Tune?
I am not going to comment on what I did or did not say back in the late 90s.
My nurse came back to the room, found me with my bloody swollen lip, and we left immediately and came home. He was getting ready and went to the door, and there I sat on the bed, just devastated, and he goes to the door, casually puts on his sunglasses, and says, "You better get some ice on that."
She held on to my hand, and she said, "Do you understand everything that you do?" I mean, cold chills went up my spine. That's the first time I became afraid of that woman.
People have been harassing my husband for, gosh, I don't know, ever since I've known him.
I believe she knew it. Just like I said, it was a political relationship that they had. It wasn't a normal, average marriage. She didn't even stand up for the women that knew what her husband did, and she knew what her husband did to those women. There's no way that she did not know that.
Here they come again. We're going to have to just ride through this as we have so many of these other false accusations.
There's been a lot of people that's come up dead in Arkansas, and I've had a lot of people ask me, "Aren't you scared for your life?" And actually, I have been.
"We will destroy you," is what they said to me.
Who said?
My brother said it on behalf of Billy when he was campaigning for him in 1992.
I have to believe that it is in large measure motivated by people who just flat out disagree with the kind of politics and policies that my husband believes are best for America.
Bill, you're in any danger? And at this point, people threaten you?
Not anymore. I used to.
You used to think that you were in physical danger?
Really, really. Yeah, I was. I was very scared. I was horribly, horribly threatened. And people don't know that story.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that there are professional forces on the right at work for their own purposes and profit. There are just so many curious relationships among a lot of people and various institutes and entities. And I think that that deserves thorough investigation.
Why did you originally deny it, considering this was a legal matter?
Did you see what happened to Jennifer Flowers? Mm. Did you see what was happening to Paula Jones? Yes. No, not afraid. I just knew what would happen.
If I ever had to meet her in person, it would be very hard for me not to walk up and smack her. I know that sounds mean. I mean, she put me through a lot at 12 years old. I mean, I had to go look through this window and ID these guys. I just want to know, you got a daughter and a grandbaby. What happens if that daughter of yours, if that would have been her, and they pulled you in at that time to do that? What would you done? You would have protected her. Where you don't know me, so I'm be scrapped to you. You know, who cares about me as long as you can win your first case as an attorney? And that was her first case ever.
I made this case and that we had to go forward. We had no choice anymore but to go for a special counsel. And man, she just jumped down my throat. It was fierce and chilling.
She kind of belittled him in front of everybody, and anybody that stood up and tried to say this is a bad idea was, you know, smashed down and belittled very personally.
Did you ever throw a lamp at your husband?
No, I didn't.
Did you ever throw a Bible at your husband?
No, I didn't.
Do you have a terrible temper?
No, but I do get angry about things. I'm not going to deny that.
If you go to the end of the line.
Okay.
Why don't you go to the end of the line?
Yeah, we'll take care.
The fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
You want me to tell you what my husband thinks? My husband is not the Secretary of State. I am. So you ask my opinion, I will tell you my opinion. I'm not going to be channeling my husband.
This woman, this little soft-spoken, pardon me for the phrase, dowdy woman, that was seen very unassertive, took a hold of my hand and squeezed it and said, "Do you understand everything that you do?" I could have passed out at that moment. And she held on to my hand and she said, "Do you understand everything that you do?" I mean, cold chills went up my spine. That's the first time I became afraid of that woman.
I am so sick. I am so sick of the Sanders campaign lying about me. I'm sick of
them. And I also think we'd be a lot better off if we actually talked to each other instead of yelling at each other.
I am sick and tired of people who say that if you debate and you disagree with this administration, somehow you're not patriotic, and we should stand up and say we are Americans and we have a right to debate and disagree with any administration.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. There are many of the Clinton accusers. They've been out there for years. And then, of course, I had time with them, and they will be on Hannity tonight. Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey, Paula Jones, and Kathy Shelton, who was raped when she was 12, and the rapist was defended by Hillary Clinton. And she was on this radio program earlier this week. And I know the media now. Let me just give you a headline for tonight. I asked these women, as now the New York Times and the rest of the media complex, which we now have learned through WikiLeaks, is owned and is an extension of the Clinton campaign. I asked them, were you ever contacted by any of the mainstream media to tell your story this year? No. All these other women that are just coming out 26 days before the election, they're everywhere. And by the way, none of the allegations are as severe as what you will hear tonight. Joining us now, Colonel Buzz Patterson, author of Dereliction of Duty, Eyewitness Account of How Bill Clinton Compromised America's National Security. Gary Byrne, decorated White House Secret Service veteran who witnessed obscenity-filled rages, violent behavior in the Clinton White House. He wrote Crisis of Character, a White House Secret Service officer, discloses his firsthand experience with Hillary, Bill, and how they operate. And thank you both for being with us. Gary, you were outside the Oval Office door for 8 years. Do you remember Kathleen Willey coming in by any chance?
No, I do not, Sean. It's one of the I do remember seeing her, but I don't remember the day that her incident happened. And it does kind of haunt me, Sean, because when I heard the story, everything she described to me was true to life. Everything she described in the hallway outside the study, I mean, that was my post. I knew it like the back of my hand, and it all rings true. And I feel like crap that I couldn't have been there. I mean, I don't know what I could have done, but if she'd possibly come out and said what had happened, you know, maybe we could have done something to help her, but who knows? But it does bother me greatly.
But you know Clinton was having sexual relations with these women on a regular basis in the Oval Office, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right behind the Oval Office in the study there, Sean. Yeah, we knew by then what was going on with the intern, and we suspected, well, we knew, you know, what was going on with some of the other women, too.
And you could name women that would go to see him on a regular basis for this reason.
Yeah, I discussed three particular women in my testimony for the Ken Starr grand jury. That's exactly right.
Tell us about those.
Well, the one, of course, was Monica Lewinsky, the intern that was about 21 years old when he was about 50. And then, of course, there was...
How did you know? Let's start, go one at a time. How did you know with Monica that there was something going on?
Well, to be honest with you, Sean, I tried to deny it at first because I didn't want to believe it. But as time went on, it became clear. There was an incident one time when the Navy steward, and I ended up testifying to a couple different things like this, but the Navy steward came up, and he had some towels in his hand, and he was aggravated because in the towels were fluids from a man, and they were in the study. Clearly, the president had just been with a woman, and the steward was tired of cleaning it up. So in an effort to try to make it go away, I took a trash bag. He threw the towels in the trash bag, and then I destroyed them. And there had been other...
Was that after a Monica Lewinsky visit or some other woman?
You know, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't sure at the time. I believe it was Monica Lewinsky at the time because of the way my testimony was set up, you know, if I remember correctly. That's what they were talking about. So, and there was another time when there was somebody in there and there was lipstick on tissues. And then, of course, there was the incident with Eleanor Mondale over in the mansion one Christmas. So,
And that's where actually they saw the two of them on a table together making out, right?
They were standing in front of a table, yeah. I was walking back from the east side of the White House to the west side. I'm sure Colonel Patterson remembers the ground floor there and the post right outside the map room. And I stopped to talk to the agent and the officer there, and Stewart walks up with a clean shirt for the president. As he walks into the map room, the steward is looking at us, talking to us. He opens up the door, and we're looking into the map room, and there's Bill Clinton standing with Eleanor Mondale toe-to-toe, making out like high school seniors. And the steward saw the look on our face, and he turned around and looked into the room and saw what we saw. He quickly closed the door and ran down the hallway. And, you know, I looked at the two guys I was talking to and said, you know, welcome to the White House, Merry Christmas. And you know, just another day. So
unbelievable. Colonel Buzz Patterson, Lieutenant Colonel, tell us what you saw and what you understood and what you write about in your book.
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. When I first got there in May of 1996, I noticed Monica Lewinsky with an unusual access to the West Wing and the Oval Office because she was an intern. She didn't work there. And I would often on weekends be required to place phone calls for President Clinton to world leaders. One time I remember in particular, he wanted to get Hosni Mubarak, the Egyptian president, on the line and had me come to the Oval Office and place a phone call for him. Well, I had President Mubarak on the line and had to go into the Oval Office. And again, in the back study where Gary's talking about, Bill came around the corner, President Clinton came around the corner with his pants undone and his shirt unbuttoned, and I interrupted him and Monica Lewinsky. That was my first indication of what was going on, and I talked to a couple of Secret Service guys after that, and they confirmed my suspicions.
So you caught them in the act. Was that the day she had the blue dress on or another day?
No, I never saw her. I never saw her other than I saw her walking in and walking out. So I didn't see what she was. I can't recall what she was wearing. But I had to place a phone call from Betty Curry's desk. She was the secretary, but it was a Saturday afternoon. And I was at Betty Curry's desk placing the phone call to Egypt. And it took me a little while to get President Mubarak on the line. And when I finally got him on the line, I had to alert President Clinton to come to the phone. And that's where he was back in the study with Monica. So I never saw her in the study at that moment, but I did see her walk in and walk out. So it was very clear to me very early on in my time there what was going on.
What did you think of that video that came out about Bill Clinton groping that flight attendant, had his hands between her legs?
Well, I had experience with that, too. John, as we talked about last time, we were coming back from Europe on Air Force One late at night, and I landed at Andrews and helicoptered over to the South Lawn, and I put President Clinton to bed. Went to my bedroom in the lower wing of the East Wing, lower floor of the East Wing. The phone rang, and it was Mark Donnelly, President's personal pilot. Air Force One pilot on the phone, and he had a young staff sergeant, young lady flight attendant, Air Force One flight attendant, in front of him in tears. And President Clinton had cornered her in the galley of Air Force One and sexually molested her. I had walked down to the Oval Office as a young major in the Air Force and confront the commander in chief and arrange an apology between him and the young lady, the Air Force One flight attendant. That's all she wanted was an apology. She didn't want to come forward. She was married, had kids, and just didn't want to be part of that whole, you know, Paula Jones, Monica Lewinsky, Kathleen Willey explosion. And we arranged the apology on Air Force One, which he did, which is very uncontrite. He apologized if he'd hurt her feelings. I believe it's the words he was using at the time. So I had very upfront and close personal experience with that as well.
So, I mean, you literally had to arrange a way to smooth this whole thing over. which is pretty unbelievable. I mean, if we had to talk about how many women this guy was involved in, I'm trying to understand.
Let's just use his own word. He bragged, we found out during testimony, he bragged to Vernon Jordan that there were hundreds of them.
And is that possible? I mean, you were outside the Oval Office door. I mean, is it possible? I mean, did that many people go in and out of the Oval Office?
Well, I'm going to tell you, and Colonel Patterson will certainly understand this. I'm going to tell you what some of the agents that I used to work with outside the Oval Office used to tell me. Gary, you have no idea what goes on out on the road.
So in other words, out on the road, they would make arrangements. So basically, the Secret Service was used as his private, I don't want to use the wrong word here. I mean, the Secret Service was put in the position of having to keep secrets about the many affairs and sexual liaisons this guy's having.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, listen, when you're protecting a president and they have to go over the radio, as the Air Force One's getting ready to lift off from an airport in Chicago, they have to go over the radio and have an agent jump in the car with the president's wedding band because he took it off the night before because he was meeting with somebody, and they had to use a government car and race all the way across the town to the waiting Air Force One with his wedding band. I mean, those are things that you only hear when people like myself and Colonel Patterson come forward. And it was just one example of the crazy stuff that used to go on, you know. He couldn't return without the wedding band.
All right, guys, thank you for telling your story. We really appreciate it, especially on this crazy, insane media news day. I think the biggest headline out of the story you're going to hear tonight with Juanita, Paula, and Kathleen, and Kathy Shelton is that the media has no interest in their story as they now seek out any woman that they can that clearly appear to be have been lined up, ready to go. And this, you know, the correlation or the collusion that goes on with the media. I've never seen such downright corruption in my life. So I don't know what you're going to think about all this. I don't have no idea how the country can respond to all of this in 26 days and absorb all of this. But maybe the best thing to do is get a good night's sleep every night. I'm trying hard.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
For 30 years she's been doing this, Anderson. I say it all the time. She talks about health care. Why didn't she do something about it? She talks about taxes. Why didn't she do something about it? She doesn't do anything about anything other than talk. With her, it's all talk and no action. The vacuum they've left, that's why ISIS formed in the first place. They started from that little area, and now they're in 32 different nations, Hillary. Congratulations. Great job. She lied. Now she's blaming the lie on the late, great Abraham Lincoln. That's one that I haven't... Okay, Honest Abe. Honest Abe never lied. That's the good thing. That's the big difference between Abraham Lincoln and you. That's a big, big difference. We're talking about some difference. Take a look at Benghazi. She said, who's going to answer the call at 3 o'clock in the morning? Guess what? She didn't answer because when Ambassador Stevens...
The question is that the discipline of a good leader?
600 times. Well, she said she was awake at 3 o'clock in the morning. And she also sent a tweet out at 3 o'clock in the morning, but I won't even mention that. But she said she'll be awake. Who's going to... The famous thing, we're going to answer our call at 3 o'clock in the morning. Guess what happened? Ambassador Stevens sent 600 requests for help. And the only one she talked to was Sidney Blumenthal, who's her friend and not a good guy, by the way. So, you know, she shouldn't be talking about that. And all you have to do is take a look at WikiLeaks and just see what they said about Bernie Sanders and see what Deborah Wasserman Schultz had in mind, because Bernie Sanders, between superdelegates and Deborah Wasserman Schultz, he never had a chance. And I was so surprised to see him sign on with the devil. You delete 33,000 emails, and then you acid wash them, or bleach them, as you would say, a very expensive process. So we're going to get a special prosecutor, and we're going to look into it, because you know what? People have been, their lives have been destroyed for doing one-fifth of what you've done, and it's a disgrace, and honestly, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
And as I said, there is no evidence that any classified information ended up in the wrong hands.
Okay, we're going to move on.
And yet, she didn't know the letter C on a document, right? She didn't even know what that letter meant.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. One of the things so many of you are asking me about are the polls, and we're 26 days out, and I don't think polling has even begun to touch on the news that has been breaking fast and furious in just this week alone. I don't think we've gotten any polls that have fully captured what happened at the debate. I don't think we've gotten any polls that is factoring in the WikiLeaks dump, which is extensive and expansive. I don't think there's any polls, you know, as it relates to this latest accusation against Donald Trump today, or the fact that I have Juanita Broderick, Kathy Shelton, Paula Jones, and Kathleen Willey on Hannity tonight. So I don't know when polls are going to matter, probably a week out of the election. That's when you start getting real numbers, because the media outlets become afraid if they're wrong. So there's all the polling that seems slanted in the beginning, and then all of a sudden it begins to shore up where it actually is. So frankly, anyone that's telling you they know how this race is going to turn out, I think hasn't a clue. Anyway, joining us now, John McLaughlin. He is a pollster, founder of McLaughlin & Associates. Doug Schoen, thank you both for being with us. Am I right about the polling at this point? There's too many issues out there percolating for people, for us to read polls with any sense of accuracy, John?
Well, you know, 4 years ago, Barack Obama did not pull ahead in the polls until the Sunday before the Tuesday election. And it was only like by a point and a half in the average. And he ended up winning by 3 points. But the but these polls are volatile. And in spite of, by the way, in spite of all the mainstream media bias, the big hit on Trump before that with his taxes and with the NBC tape, in spite of all that hit, she's still stuck in the low 40s. Most Americans don't want to vote for her. And when you look at Rasmussen came out today, and it has Trump ahead nationally in the four-way race, 43 to 41. And that's the only poll that was done after the debate, after Monday night's debate, where Trump really came back and he really gave quite a performance that he was able to reset the agenda and help himself. So that's the only poll out there nationally that has that in there. And the polls before it, like the Wall Street Journal poll, that was done prior to the debate, so it wouldn't reflect that at all. It certainly the Wall Street Journal NBC poll certainly gave Clinton the lead, but again, it didn't factor in the debate. Now you have another debate coming up next Wednesday that is certainly, you know, for those who watched, it was the rubber match. Plus, you got to watch out for the polls that are biased. Like CBS YouGov put out a poll saying 812 people watched the debate, and they said Clinton had won 47-42, and she would win the election 48-42. They would vote for a 48-42. The interesting part is when you check the demographics on the poll, it was 41% Democrat and only 31% Republican. It had a plus Democrat edge. So if you factor that in, Trump did really well.
What's your take on the polls, Doug?
Yeah, I think there have been enough swing states that have come out at NBC.
Are you on a football phone, or are you on
no.
a speaker, or what?
No. I'm on a cell phone. You know, we liberals have to work hard nowadays.
Oh, okay. No multitasking during my show. Go ahead.
No, absolutely. No multitasking, but truth-telling. And given the polls that have come out...
I think there's definitely something up with all that. Do you think
here.
As all of the things that we are learning about Hillary and WikiLeaks, you know, well, you got to be a public and you have to have a private position. So, in other words, she's admitting she's a liar and a phony, which, by the way, would explain away Benghazi. Right. She tells her daughter the truth, the Libyan president the truth, the Egyptian prime minister the truth. So her admitting that you need a public and a private position is interesting. You know, she believes and talked about open borders and open trade on a level nobody's ever heard about, which is an open hemisphere. How the Clinton campaign planned distractions from the email scandal, even using the four dead in Benghazi. How most of the Clinton Foundation donors are not even American, they're getting the money from outside, and how pay to play is now a bigger factor than anybody knew. How they tried to get her off her position where she did support the Keystone Pipeline. She did support fracking. She said that privately that the Syrian no-fly zone would never work, but that's her position publicly now. She admits she can't vet all refugees. And then you've got this whole media conspiracy where literally Univision, NBC, ABC, MSNBC, CNN, and basically the New York Times and Washington Post and Boston Globe and everybody else, I mean, is in her corner. I mean, how much does this impact the American people? How much can they possibly absorb here?
Well, the amazing part is that in spite of the avalanche of media in her favor and the bias, and even in the debate when Donald Trump had to say, oh, okay, I get it, it's 1-on-3 because of the interruptions, and there, at one point Martha Raddatz was arguing with him. I think average person, when they see it, they're discounting it. The media has lost a ton of credibility. 2-to-1, when we've tested it, the majority of Americans think the media is biased against Donald Trump. And, you know, his supporters are basically going right through it. And as you've had Newt Gingrich on your show where he says it's going to be Trump and his social media efforts where he can get out directly to the voters versus the mainstream media bias trying to convince us that this, that we've seen or heard something we don't believe.
All these things that are coming out in WikiLeaks. Doug Schoen, are you back with us?
Yeah, I am. I'm ready.
All right, let me go over some of this with you because I think it's very telling and very revealing that, oh, she's a phony. She takes one position publicly and a very different position privately, you know, that she wants open hemisphere borders. I mean, not just open borders. We learned that, you know, she purposely used Benghazi to distract from the email scandal. Most Clinton Foundation donors are not American. That they did buy access. There's more evidence of pay to play. You know, the Keystone Pipeline, the Syrian no-fly zone, fracking. These are all issues that she's taken very different private positions versus her public position. You know, she's admitting that they can't vet all refugees. She's agreeing with Donald Trump on that. I mean, the DNC colluding to help her beat Bernie Sanders. I mean, there's so much corruption here. I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Sean. If it becomes a kitchen sink job against her, she will win. If Trump can focus on key issues that people care about, change in corruption, and particularly her flip-flops on issues like open borders and her advocacy of free trade when she says now that she's against TPP. If he can do that and be disciplined in his message, he has a chance to come back. But candidly, if he just throws everything at her and he has the problems he has with the women, with the tape, and with Paul Ryan and the establishment, it's going to be very tough for Donald Trump. You're right. Voters don't like Hillary Clinton. Problem is, the issues become Trump again rather than the secretary.
What about these women? Obviously, Doug, you've been in this game too long. When you're 26 days out of an election and you're getting a document dump a day by WikiLeaks that make you look really bad, it seems that these, quote, women were teed up and ready to go for a long time for political purposes. Is that a fair analysis?
Well, I read Jessica Leeds' account of having been silent for many years and watching the debate and seeing the tape and feeling compelled to come forward. So it doesn't seem to me, at least in that case, that that's what happened. But, you know, I'm no expert on this. I just see what I...
All right. So I'm interviewing Paula Jones, Juanita Broderick, and Kathleen Willey and Kathy Shelton tonight. Now, what's interesting is I've talked to these women before this interview. They've all told me nobody in the mainstream media that is now putting these new women forward have ever contacted them this election cycle.
And again, Bill Clinton's not running, Hillary Clinton is, and that's the real issue.
What is your take, John?
I think the real issue is the fact that the unbelievable double standard of the media is they're all in a frenzy right now trying to find any woman who'll say something bad about Donald Trump, because it's illegitimate when Trump forced the issue and brought these women who were the victims of Bill Clinton, and I would say victims of Hillary Clinton, because she did what she could to shut them up and enable him, and they don't want to play that story.
Well, now we know that Hillary cheated the Bernie Sanders campaign and they colluded against her. The recent dump today is Bill Clinton accepted $1 million check from Qatar. By the way, raping women is legal there. Hillary Clinton is not so fond of the gay community, we find out. Hillary Clinton, you know, on top of everything else, they're making fun of Latinos in this. Do you think in 26 days all of this is going to be able to be absorbed by the public, both of you?
I think there's going to be one point where it just hits a saturation where the supporters discount it, and particularly the Trump supporters. They don't want to listen. It's too much as an avalanche. But I do agree with Doug is there needs to be a concentrated focus by Donald Trump where he goes back to his change message and starts talking about, guess what, the Clinton plan, it'll raise your taxes and it'll cost us 700,000 jobs.
How does Trump do that when all the media is doing all day long and we now know they're colluding with the Clinton campaign?
He goes straight to, by the way, you should bring up the fact every day he should be after the media, their bias, et cetera, but he should bring that up. I mean, the ridiculousness that Clinton was getting questions ahead of time, and John Harwood from the Wall Street, CNBC was a, sent, you know, coaching, you know, rooting on the Democrats, et cetera, in his emails. I mean, those are all facts that we should certainly bring up, but still, the election is about, you know, restoring America. It's about changing things for the better for the average person. They really do want to hear about jobs. They really want to do hear about national security. They really want to do hear about securing the borders and not having open borders. So the hard part is, you know, the last debate is Wednesday. He's got to really refocus the agenda and say that's the real comparison, because Clinton's plan has always been she has majority of Americans are unfavorable to her. They don't want her as president. Her only path to win is trying to keep on assaulting his character and making making things worse. And the best thing for him to say is, you know, I'm a flawed person. I've made mistakes in life, but I've said I apologize for that. But this is about the people out there and their daily lives, their jobs, their paychecks, their security, their health care. And I'm going to talk about that. And if you want to agree to that with me, we should. And, you know, end the character assaults. And she won't agree to it. I mean, the only way she wins is to keep attacking him personally.
Yeah. I think the pivot, though, you know, look, when you have CNN feeding questions to Hillary and you have a whole network, NBC, you know, putting in moderators that are purposely attacking him, and then you have Univision, the head of Univision, telling Hillary what to do and what to attack Trump on.
Right.
And, you know, you add to that the rest of the media. There's nobody on his side. And then you got half the Republicans bailing out on him. It seems the media establishment, Republican establishment, Democratic establishment, you know, the crony capitalist establishment. Then you've got the lobbyist establishment. And even the UN is against Trump. So is it possible for him to overcome that, or is it just too much for anybody?
Look, I think it is very hard for him, given what he's facing now. But the only way he can do it, Sean, is to be disciplined and focused and not just try to throw everything he has at her. Have two or three core themes on open borders, on immigration and trade, combined with corruption, and just drive those messages.
And you think he could win if he does that?
I think it's possible he can get this race very close, because John's right. There's only about 40 to 45% of America who is willing to vote for her. He's got to focus the opposition. Right now, his negatives are going up because of what you guys described, and he needs to focus attention on her and change. And if he's not disciplined, he may throw the kitchen sink at her, but it's not going to be effective.
All right, guys, thank you both for being with us. News Roundup Information Overload Hour, the program's coming up next. Jeff Lord and Daniel McLaughlin.
Is there any part of that story, because they portray him as so negative towards women, and they use you to portray him that way, is there any part of the Donald Trump they describe that you saw?
Well, they're not going to use me to do that, because no, your answer is no. I have never seen him be anything but a gentleman, very gracious to women, very respectful of women, and anybody that tells me that I saw that is wrong. He was not that way to me. He wasn't that way to anybody I've met. I met a lot of women when I was around him. He employs a lot of women. He deals with a lot of women, and he respects them, and they respect him, and I just don't
see it.
Last
question. Do you feel, Roanne, that the New York Times was using you? Do you think they had pre-written the story and that they had an agenda and were trying to force you to say things or trying to get you to say things to fit their narrative that they had already made?
I do. I feel like they had an agenda and they were trying to stick to it and they were trying to paint him in a bad light. There's nothing else that can convince me otherwise. Having asked them so many times and being promised repeatedly that it was not going to be exactly what it turned out to be and made me angry. I'm not going to just say that's okay, because it's not supposed to happen. It shouldn't happen, and we can let it happen. It's not fair to Donald. It's not fair to me. And it's just not cool to the voters either. It's just not right.
Back in March, when they started this whole campaign against him. There were several reporters that had reached out to me telling me that they were doing an interview about Trump and women and how he treats women. And I told them, I'm not going to be doing an interview at this time. I said, I'm not interested. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I started a business. I'm not interested. And I said, and by the way, I have nothing bad to say about him. So go get it from someone else. And so what did they do? They quoted something from my book. And what upsets me is they say in this article in the New York Times, they say the New York Times interviewed dozens of women who had worked with or for Mr. Trump. And so it made it seem like they interviewed me recently, which that's not true. So they're lying.
All right, News Roundup Information Overload Hour. That was Carrie Prejean, who was former Miss California 2009, Roanne Brewer Lane, a former girlfriend of Donald Trump. You might remember the New York Times came out with this article, I think it was back in May, and they ended up in major damage control because the women they featured, front cover, Sunday newspaper, were contending that the women all came out and said, sorry, that's not what we told you. That's not what we said. So this is not the first time that the New York Times has made this run at making Donald Trump look like a misogynist and a sexist with these new allegations today. But in the case of Roanne Brewer Lane, you just heard one of the billionaire's former companions, the article which Trump assailed, and then they came out publicly and defended him, and it went away. Well, how do you vet this now with such a little amount of time to actually move forward? Now, the person that was responsible responsible for that piece. It turns out that was the guy that wrote it, Barbero, is clearly not a Trump fan. Joe Concha wrote back then at length about how he decided and needed to decide between being an opinion writer and an unbiased political reporter, because a sampling of his recent tweet showed at the time that he's far from dispassionate when it came to Donald Trump. So the New York Times got exposed back then. I mean, how did all that happen? And what are we to believe at this point? Now, programming note tonight on Hannity, and I think the big part of this story will never get reported. We have Juanita Broderick, we have Paula Jones, we have Kathleen Willey, and then we have Kathy Shelton. She was the young girl that was raped when she was 12 years old. And then we'll have a panel discussing all of this tonight. But one of the things that I think they won't talk about in the media is, how is it that if they really cared about the issues that they're reporting on today, all over the place, ad nauseum, now that we know through WikiLeaks there's the incestuous relationship between the Clinton campaign and most of the mainstream media, if not pretty much all of it. They feed questions. CNN's involved. MSNBC's involved. Let's see. We got NBC. We got CNBC. We got Univision. We got the New York Times. We got the Washington Post. We got the Boston Globe. And you can see it all day. It's been going on. All day it moves on. Anyway, so joining us is Jeff Lord, former associate political director in the Reagan administration. He wrote the book What America Needs, The Case for Trump. Danielle McLaughlin, an attorney, constitutional expert who co-wrote The Federalist Society, How Conservatives Took the Law Back from Liberals. Welcome both of you to the program. Jeff, I guess I don't even know how to process all of this. In the meantime, you know, we've got more WikiLeaks day in and day out. I mean, it's a full-time job just absorbing what's coming out about how corrupt Hillary Clinton has been her whole life and what a phony she is.
You know, I was, before we talk here, Sean, I was listening to Donald Trump today give a speech, and I think he is spot on here. He talked about corporate media and how they're out there not just to do him in, but this is all about political power and media power, and they've got it, and they're not going to give it up, and they see him as a threat, as an absolute direct threat. And this is, I hear this all the time from people here in Pennsylvania, regular folk. They see this as the elites versus themselves. That's what this is really all about. And they're going to take these things, they're going to reach back as far as they can go in time to dredge up absolutely anything, true or untrue. I mean, this woman that was on last night, she said she was in first class. Well, I've flown first class. You've flown first class. There's people there. I mean, I find this highly unlikely. But the thing that really frosts me here is that the women that you have spent so much time talking to over time and recently, I mean, the Kathy Shelton thing just blows me away. They don't want to focus on this. And so what they're doing, particularly with Juanita Broderick, is saying, in essence, well, rape is okay if it's one of our guys, but we're going to come after you. And one other thing I would throw in here, Sean, if you remember years ago in the 1980s when Ted Kennedy was in the Senate, he famously had, I mean, I've got this in front of me, it's a like a 20-page article in GQ in the day about Ted Kennedy and Chris Dodd, drunk as skunks, in a Washington restaurant that I'm familiar with, having a quote-unquote waitress sandwich, in which Kennedy threw this girl on Chris Dodd's lap and then jumped on her and started to do his thing. And she was able eventually to wriggle out of the whole deal. Well, what is Ted Kennedy? I mean, was he censored from the Senate? Was he thrown out of the Senate? No. He's the great lion of the Senate. These things don't count for these people. They do this stuff all the time. It's a massive double standard.
Where does it end up, Jeff? I mean, how does this play out?
Well, I think very clearly the American people need to rally to it, because most assuredly, what goes on, I mean, Hillary Clinton is an enabler here. And as Juanita Broderick has testified in detail, a bully towards women who have, you know, been attacked by her husband. And let's remember, there are two categories of women here. Jennifer Flowers actually had an affair with Bill Clinton. These other women had no affair with him. They were attacked or assaulted.
Isn't it amazing that I talked to them earlier today and they're going to be on tonight? And one of the things I asked them, I said, during this media cycle, because of the news about Donald Trump today, I said, did anybody contact you from CBS, CNN, ABC, NBC, you know, any of these other major? No. New York Times? No. They never contacted them.
I said to a Washington Post reporter who was focusing on this, I said, where's your front page interview with Juanita Broderick?
What'd they say?
The answer, in essence, was that's old news.
That's old news.
Yeah.
But they didn't talk to her at all during this campaign cycle. So
right.
I guess it's really old news, that really hasn't been told to an entire generation of people.
Well, that's right. And as my friend Kaylee McEnany, who's a solid Trump supporter and a young woman, says that she mentions this stuff at every turn because young millennial women don't know it, don't know the tale.
What's your take, Danielle McLaughlin?
Get it out there.
My liberal friend?
You know, there's a lot going on here, and I think that a lot of this is hugely diversionary from these really important issues that we should be discussing. You know, Jeff spoke a little bit about reaching back and talking about allegations that may be true, may be untrue. I think all victims or alleged victims should be heard, and that goes for Clinton accusers, and that goes for Trump accusers. I think this is coming to a head now because of the tape leakage, and then, of course, because on that Trump, on the tape, Trump explained or described what he would do, and now we're hearing from women who are repeating that story or speaking about that.
Well, they had many other opportunities to come forward. Does it seem a little suspicious? Because it does to me in terms of the timing of it all. Because there were many instances in which issues involving Donald Trump and women came up in this campaign.
Well, what is surprising to me, Sean, is that some of the comments and the Howard Stern, footage hasn't come up earlier in the cycle. I think that people who knew about Trump and knew what he was doing in the 90s and the early 2000s, none of this comes as a surprise. When we're talking about victims of sexual assault or alleged victims of sexual assault, that kind of thing is very isolating, it's humiliating, it's embarrassing. And it's a little bit like what we saw with Bill Cosby. There are women who have these experiences, who feel ashamed, who feel somehow that it's their fault, and they don't come out. And then years later, and that was true with Juanita Broderick, we didn't hear from her for 15 years, and she came out and told her story much later than the alleged activities occurred. So women and all victims of this kind of a crime or this kind of alleged crime sometimes feel safety and strength in numbers. And like I said, the Bill Cosby example is one I would point to where there was sort of a floodgates. And I'm not making any claim here about any veracity that is not for me to speak to.
Does it trouble you at all that we now have discovered the media collusion, the Department of Justice collusion, the White House collusion with the Clinton campaign?
Well, if you're talking about the notion that the DOJ or that Robbie Mook knew there was a scheduling hearing as it related to some email, to the email litigation, that doesn't concern me. I think
it's more than a scheduling, because they're talking about preparing the campaign for a release of information. And why is there any contact at all? Just like I'm sure you would agree as an attorney for Bill Clinton to meet with Loretta Lynch for 39 minutes in a private plane on a tarmac just before she's about to decide the fate of a very important investigation of his wife is inappropriate.
Totally agree with you, Sean. Totally improper. As a Clinton supporter, I remember hearing about that and it was a facepalm moment for me and many people because it was completely inappropriate, and I do agree. I think WikiLeaks, we've got a mix of embarrassing and some bad and some ugly. I think, Jeff, you can talk to this, having been in mission the Reagan administration and certainly in times of crisis. Politics is like making sausages. No one should see it. And so what I see happening here is the kind of not that pretty side of politics, but it is still politics in a way that folks who are operatives within it can understand, even if it's kind of ugly.
What's your reaction, Jeff?
Well, you know, Sean, it's the double standard, and I said this on television. I want one standard here. I don't want to see. I went back and took a look. There was a column written by the then New York Times columnist Anna Quindlen during the Clarence Thomas episode. And it was called Listen to Us. And she was very indignant. And she talked about all these white guys on this panel and they don't listen to women. And what we really need is a woman, to more women to be running for office, et cetera. And she was very indignant about Clarence Thomas. And then, of course, we get to the Bill Clinton episode. And you and I and all of America were told it's only about sex. It's not a big deal. There's a double standard here. And here we go again. You know, Bill Cosby, who happens to be black, no small coincidence, they finally go after him. And now Donald Trump, if Donald is running as the Republican nominee, if Donald Trump were the Republican or the Democratic nominee for president, you can bet that we would be getting the same old story that this just doesn't matter. Now,
I don't buy that for a second, Jeff. I really don't.
Standard here. And one other thing, Sean, that I want to say, just in a cultural sense, as a baby boomer, I certainly remember the sexual revolution, quote unquote. And my parents' generation were appalled, and they were thought to be a bunch of old fuddy-duddies.
today, it's all these people on the left who are the fuddy duddies, and they're the one who generated all this stuff.
Look, I don't think this is about
Paris with glorifies rape with Marlon Brando, and the guy got nominated for an Oscar for this stuff. I mean, this is
not about what we see in the media. This is a man who is wanting to be president of the United States, who has, on a national stage in a debate, said that it was only words. This is a man who was caught on tape boasting about he sexually.
Well, hang on a second, but then you can't say that and then ignore Hillary Clinton's involvement of calling Monica Lewinsky a narcissistic Looney Tune and saying she wants to crucify Jennifer Flowers, or her not acknowledging, she says the victims of sexual assault have a right to be believed, but not investigating Juanita Broderick's claim or Kathleen Willey's claim, or the fact that Paul Jones was able to describe in detail specific issues involving then President Bill Clinton's private parts.
I'm not going to defend anyone who attacks someone who said they're a victim of sexual assault. And that includes, in this instance, Hillary Clinton, because I think it's wrong. And I think when she says all victims of sexual assault, and this is men, this is women, they deserve to be heard. What's happening now, I think, too, Sean, we're talking about Bill Cosby, and Jeff, you don't like that example. Here's another example, the Catholic Church. So victims, for years and years and years, were silenced because there was a power structure. They were embarrassed. They were ashamed. And then once the lid came off, we saw this flood, this torrent. So what we're seeing from an institutional perspective, as these claims are coming out, I think it can be explained by the nature of the crime and the idea that people feel that maybe they aren't alone. And, you know, this notion that somehow Democrats are fuddy-duddies. Look, this is someone who has walked into dressing rooms with Miss Universe contestants.
But that was his job, for crying out loud.
It's,
I mean, let's be real.
Sure.
Well,
I mean, really,
I'll stop
really,
it.
Really. Look, you,
right, I'm just out of time. I've got a break, but we'll continue this discussion on the other side. We'll get to your calls coming up next. 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. We'll take a quick break. Remember, Juanita Broderick, Paula Jones, Kathleen Willey, Kathy Shelton, all on Hannity tonight telling their story. Interesting how nobody else in the media invited him on at all this election cycle. Nobody. I don't even know how to really get you to sort through all of this, except to use your own basic, simple, common sense. Because we've learned so much in the last number of days about how corrupt things are in this country and how incestuous this relationship is. The lobbyist establishment, the media establishment, the Democratic Party establishment, Republican Party establishment, the globalist establishment. I mean, it is as bad a conspiracy that is being exposed every day. Now, with all the news out there today, I doubt most people are hearing that Bill Clinton accepted $1 million check from Qatar. By the way, raping women is legal in Qatar. Or Hillary Clinton's not so fond of the gay community. I guess that's going to get buried, too, because that's exactly what the Clintons wanted. Which is why I'm very suspicious about the timing of all of these women coming out in one day against Donald Trump. You don't think this was done? They even talk in WikiLeaks how they would use Benghazi to distract from the email server scandal. They haven't changed their playbook. This is now they've been exposed to what their playbook is. You know, it should be so obvious to people. You know, Hillary's just her whole rap, for example, that Hillary Clinton gives out there. It's fairly fascinating to follow because they're exposing all of it, that they take one position in private, another position in public. And that basically explains Benghazi, doesn't it? Because that's her philosophy. Tell you one thing, lie to you, the American people, and tell her daughter and the Libyan president and the Egyptian prime minister the truth. It's pretty amazing to see a conspiracy with NBC, CNBC, Univision, CNN, MSNBC. They've literally fed the questions to the MSNBC hosts. You know, the New York Times, the Boston Globe, the Washington Post. No wonder why they didn't interview Paula Jones, Kathleen Willey, Kathy Shelton, and Juanita Broderick. They leave that for me, and then they criticize me. You need a public position and a private position. Public position is the lie, and the private position is how you really feel. Hillary talks one way about trade and open borders, but behind the scenes, when she's paid $250,000 a speech, she wants an open hemisphere. My dream is for hemispheric common markets with open trade and open borders. Well, that's 600 million people. You know, the Clinton campaign planned distractions from the email scandal, including using Benghazi. I guess those four dead Americans, at this point, what difference does it make? It makes a big difference if we can use them to distract from my scandal.
What difference at this point does it make?
Does it matter that most Clinton Foundation donors weren't American and she admitted it in a speech? Does it matter that 55% of the people that got to see her were people that donated? Even Chelsea Clinton in the WikiLeaks said, hey, we got to watch this. This isn't good. She had serious concerns about conflicts of interest, and then she was called a spoiled brat in that case. They showed that Hillary's staff even, you know, they give secret notes on when she needed a smile. She's so phony. After the Haitian relief and disaster and the earthquake, well, they made a list. They separated out requests from friends of Bill and William Jefferson Clinton VIPs so that their business interests or contracts would get the special treatment to get the money that they had raised, and then they could do all the relief work, which, by the way, never happened. You know, the DNC vice chair feeding information about Bernie Sanders' plans to Clinton. You know, this comes after a secret tape shows Hillary Clinton calling Bernie Sanders basement dwellers. Now you're just being called rednecks and deplorables that are irredeemable. And reporters who work for these outfits, I guess they think of themselves as reporters, but they're not. They're just basically an extension of the Clinton campaign. All of these networks doing favors for the Clintons, all these newspapers doing favors for the Clintons, basically just an extension of the Clintons. You know, the email revealed she believes in global governance, unlimited immigration. She dreams of a single-payer system when she was speaking in Canada. We know that the Department of Justice fed information to the Clinton campaign about the email investigation. You know, we know the election of Hillary is, what is this going to lead to here? The single most corrupt individual. Privately, she's saying a no-fly zone can't work. Publicly, she wants a no-fly zone. Publicly, she's saying we can vet refugees. Privately, she's saying we can't possibly vet all these refugees. And no, she knows the truth, but she's willing to gamble with your life and take them in because she thinks that's the position that's going to get her more votes. It's crazy. Really unbelievable. And don't forget, John Podesta discussed infiltrating the Catholic Church with progressive ideology to foment revolution. Or Hillary praising Vladimir Putin, or Hillary in one of the WikiLeaks, you know, saying, I know she hates everyday Americans. She's begun to hate everyday Americans. We'll make her say it anyway, even though she doesn't want to say it. Or John Podesta saying, you need to call those needy Latinos. She needs to call them because they're driving them nuts and she needs their support. So you got to call the needy ones, you rednecks.
You know, look, man, the other guy's base is what I grew up in. You know, I'm basically your standard redneck.
Standard redneck. Let's get to our phones. Chris is in New York, the all-new AM 710 WOR. What's going on, Chris? How are you, sir?
All right, sir. How about you?
I'm good.
Good. Well, the point I wanted to make is I think that Donald Trump can actually turn the media bias to his advantage by pointing out that if he's president, the media is going to do its job, be skeptical of government like it's supposed to be, and tell us what's happening in his administration. The collusion with Hillary Clinton is not going to stop on Inauguration Day, and she's not going to suddenly turn honest on Inauguration Day.
No, I think it's actually going to be so much worse than what you're describing. Here's what's going to happen. Hillary Clinton, and this is what drives me crazy about all these Republicans, weak, need, spineless, timid, feckless, visionless. You know, the very people whose lack of a backbone really created Trump. And they're going to say, Hannity, you put him on the air a lot. And I'm like, well, I put all the candidates on the air, and I kept my promise in 2015 and my promise in 2016. And the voters decided 65% felt betrayed by the Republican Party, so therefore they picked Donald Trump. I'll agree he's an imperfect candidate, flawed candidate, but compared to Hillary, what this election ought to be about is the economy, about taxes, about health care, about energy, about vetting refugees, about building a wall, about education, about saying radical Islam. But, you know, putting all that aside. But, you know, I think this is something I've never seen at a level like this where Republicans are actually pulling to appoint somebody that we know or elect somebody that will appoint the most radical, extreme people to the Supreme Court that will impact this country in devastating ways for generations. And the way it'll manifest itself is Hillary will have unbridled, unchecked power. She's not going to have a Congress that's willing to stand up to her. Just, you know, why would you believe Republicans if they hold on to the House and Senate would ever stand up to her. And then you have to think, okay, well, they'll punt to the courts like they did with executive amnesty and Obamacare. And then if the courts are realigned, as I suspect Hillary would realign them, it's pretty much a certainty. That means she could do whatever she wants. That means there will be unchecked power. She can rule through executive fiat as long as she wants to. And there's nothing we're going to be able to do about it. That's what I think is going to happen. It's going to be so ugly. It's going to be the ugliest thing you've ever seen. You're going to watch the disintegration of your Constitution before your very eyes. So I hope you NRO guys are proud when you see these appointments to the Supreme Court. We did it. We stopped Trump. We stopped him. You know what? We stood on our principles. Okay. Now you get the Hillary you deserve. Own it. Anyway, let's go to Rosalie is in Florida. Rosalie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm good. What's going on?
It's a pleasure to speak with you, Sean.
It's all mine. What's going on?
Hey, I'm one of those deplorables that Hillary talks about.
Yeah.
But I've got a couple of lines I think that would just tell everybody exactly how it is. And my two-liner for the campaign is, if you want common sense, cast your vote for Trump and Pence. And if you want more pain, dump your vote for Hillary and Cain.
Well, I like that. So you want that to be the election sentences? Say it again.
If you want common sense, cast your vote for Trump and Pence. If you want more pain, dump your vote for Hillary and Cain.
All right. Thanks, Rosalie. Appreciate that. Deborah is in Maryland. Deborah, how are you?
I really felt compelled to kind of get the word out. I know that a lot of us are on social media, and we are angry. And I know personally I'm trying to get messages out there and get things trending. And we're fired up. And that's definitely helpful. But I think a conversation, if we could have, using your voice and your platform to reach as many people as we can, now we have to take that anger and make sure that we are organized, that we are highly organized, that we are registered to vote, and that we are doing what the Democrats have done and what they did to get Obama into office, to get every single vote, to talk to neighbors, friends, you know, a real grassroots ground campaign. And I wanted to ask you, because of your voice and platform, how can you do that? And then how can we do that? If you could tell your listeners, how can we do that, each one of us?
The one thing I would say is, following this on a daily basis and looking at the polls and watching the media and seeing how one-sided everybody is and how biased it is, there probably at this point is a tendency to slip into a sense of, I won't say despair, but a sense of, yeah, I don't think this is going to happen. Maybe disgust is the right word. And my only advice is, I don't know who's going to win the election. I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't have a feel for this. And I usually have a better feel for things. And I think the Democrats are so good at muddying up the waters that it's very, very hard to get a sense of where this is going. I would just say, you know, don't allow the media to deflate you. Don't allow their collusion with the Clintons to deflate you. Don't allow what appears to be, I mean, you've got the White House working for them, the Department of Justice working for them, they've got the media working for them, now they've got Republicans working for them, now they've got their own Democratic base working for them, they've got everybody. It's I've never seen such a one-sided assault and attack on one guy as I'm seeing here. And I don't know. I mean, I could see how people could get deflated. But my advice is, don't go there. Just do your best for 26 days and let the chips fall where they may.
And just get out and vote.
And get out and vote. Get out and vote.
Everybody listening, get out and vote. That's the only way we can stop her from getting into the White House.
The best thing I could tell you, because none of the polls now are going to mean a thing to me because it's so muddied, the waters, and you got WikiLeaks, and you got the last debate that hasn't really been factored in, and you know, there's just so much out there that it's very, very hard to believe any polls, probably until a week out of the election. That's when the pollsters start to try and get as accurate as they can, because they want to be able to brag they got it right, and they don't want to look bad. So until then, I would just run as though this race is close, and that every vote is going to matter. And if you live in Florida, and you live in North Carolina, and Virginia, and you live in New Hampshire, and Iowa, and you live in Ohio and Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, and you live, where else do you live? New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada. Your vote matters. And by the way, it matters everywhere else, too. We can't assume that every state is going to go the way we think, but I just say just get out and vote, and the chips are going to fall where they're going to be. We're going to have a winner, and it's either going to be Trump or it's going to be Hillary. I think the differences are deep. I think the differences are profound. And when you push away all the clutter, it's about raising taxes, lowering taxes. It's about eliminating Obamacare, keeping Obamacare. It's about energy independence or dependence. It's about saying radical Islam is president or not. It's about vetting refugees and increasing the number of refugees or extreme vetting. You know, it comes down to building a wall, not building a wall. Education top down or education back to the states. That's it. Supreme Court justices that are originalists or activists. And if you keep it simple, you know, we'll talk about all the clutter. You can't not talk about it. But if you break it down to how its actual governance will play out, that's what's going to matter.